Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Howdy, third hour, coming alive from our Quicken Loans studio. National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently here. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Series XM 206, 1-855-212-4227. On Twitter, Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney, if you want to hit us up individually. So look at some of our guests. Obviously, just starting to put this together. Santer's working on this. I know we have Darius Leonard coming up at the Super Bowl.
Like it.
We'll bring you all the big names.
I think he's winning Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year. It's hard because
Denzel Ward was very good for the Browns.
As was Derwin James.
You know what? I think Derwin James might actually win it.
I think you're right. Van Der Esch is in the conversation, too.
Yeah, so was
Leighton Van Der Esch from the Dallas Cowboys. I think I like Derwin James.
That's who I'd probably vote for now.
Just because he did so much.
He did.
They're both first-team All-Pros, so yeah.
I'd want to see how they all graded out on PFF. I know that for a while, Derwin James was high 80s.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And Denzel Ward was really high, too.
I know.
I'm going to have to do a little checking on that. Jerry Rice will stop by. Teak and I were talking during the break. Obviously, we'll be down in Atlanta. Dominique. The human highlight film. Dominique Wilkins going to stop by. All right, so let's talk some hoops here, Teak. You ready? Before we get directly into the Warriors and by extension the Lakers, I want to point something out that I don't think everybody's noticing yet, right? The Eastern Conference right now, the top six teams are playing really well.
Yeah.
The Bucks have won five straight. They've won 8 of 10, which I find interesting. The Raptors have won 8 of 10. The Pacers have won 7 of 10. Philly's won 7 of 10. The Celtics have won 7 of 10. The Nets, who are the sixth seed, have won 8 of 10 and 17 out of 22.
Yeah, they've been really good.
They look terrific.
I know.
They look great. And you contrast that to the Western Conference, where Golden State's playing really well. They've won 9 out of 10. Denver's holding up 7 of 10. But Oklahoma City's been skittish.
Yep.
The Rockets have been skittish. The Spurs are a little up and down. Clippers taking a step back. They've lost 6 of 10. So I find it interesting, the dynamic between each different conference here, where the East is settling in and the West is all over the map right now.
Except for the Jazz, who are making a run right now, who just moved into the eighth seed, winning 8 of their last 10. You're right, I don't know
how the Jazz played so poorly to start the season. I don't understand that.
I agreed. But it's interesting because for so many years it's been the Western Conference that's been the dominant side of basketball. Now, a lot of this probably is scheduling, and I haven't looked deeply enough into the Nuggets or the Thunder or the Blazers, Rockets and Spurs schedules.
Like more home games versus all that stuff.
Or versus other Western Conference squads, you know what I mean? The better teams. And so, but just from a high looking down view, the Eastern Conference looks like the viable one right now, like where there's a bunch of good teams. The 76ers just had that big win against the Rockets last night. And the Rockets have been playing good basketball. At least James Harden has been playing great basketball. And the 76ers, who we thought had a little bit of flaw in their game.
I still think they do.
And especially with Jimmy Butler out last night.
Yeah, but I still think they do.
I agree.
They don't shoot it well enough.
I agree.
Not to hang with the Warriors.
They dominated the Rockets.
I don't think the Rockets are that good. I've never thought the Rockets are that good.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah, true.
I've never been really impressed with the Rockets. I'm not saying they're not fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. When the Rockets are on Friday night ESPN, Saturday night ABC, we start getting those games now. I'll watch them because it's fun.
That is one of the good things about James Harden is he makes it a much watch.
He does. He's incredible what he does.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. All right. So the Warriors have gotten their act together. Boogie has fit in very well. Mm-hmm. And I know it's only a little bit past middle of January here, but it's at least early enough to entertain something which would be incredibly interesting if the Lakers actually face this dilemma.
Yeah.
If they even think it's a dilemma, because they might not even entertain it, although I might. So the Warriors right now are 1, and the Nuggets are the 2 seed. Denver's a game back. Everybody below the top 2 seeds in the Western Conference, 4.5 games, 4.5, 6.5. I say that because, first of all, the Warriors aren't going to drop from the top spot, but they're certainly not going to drop beyond number 2.
Yes.
Okay. So let's establish that as a parameter. The second parameter, the Lakers are right off the cut line, a game behind Utah, who you said is playing very well. You're right. They won 8 of 10. And the Clippers, who aren't playing well, they've dropped 6 of 10. So you're going to get some real combustibility there.
Agreed.
What happens, before we focus on the Warriors entirely, what happens if you're the Lakers, right, and you are just about locked in to a seed where you know that you're going to play the Warriors in the first round? The only way to avoid that is to tank the final week of the season. Would you even entertain doing that? I've heard nobody bring this up. Would you even entertain tanking to avoid the Warriors if there was a clear path to do that?
So what would be the benefit of tanking?
You don't get swept. that's the first benefit. You get to play a second playoff series, yeah, because if you don't, you're not.
Yeah, true. I don't think LeBron would let them do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, probably not. Could be a maintenance thing, though. Could be a little rest.
But I think LeBron is he's obsessive about winning.
Mm-hmm.
And especially going down the stretch, just to create
momentum
and belief, mm-hmm, and all these other things. And, I mean, would I do it? Probably, because I don't want to face the Warriors. I want to hope for an injury or something in the first round for the Warriors, and we'll get them down the line.
Yep.
But I don't see that happening. I don't think the Lakers would do that. I don't think LeBron would allow that to happen. So I'd say no.
Now, here's the other thing.
I think it's interesting because we keep talking about it, BT. Uh-huh. It's going to happen.
Well, I mean, even if the Lakers, do I think the Lakers make a move and get a 7 or 8 seed? Of course I do. Once LeBron comes back, they'll start winning a few games here, I would imagine. But can the Spurs drop a bit? I mean, could they maybe elevate to a 6 or a 5 seed? They're only a couple of games behind. But the danger of that is they've got to jump a lot of teams now,
yeah,
to get there. And that's always dicey because not only do you have to play well, but teams in front of you have to lose.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and Santer and I were talking about this during the break. TK had to step out of the room for a second. If the Lakers, and I really do like the Nuggets. I talked about them over the summer. I knew that their offense was great. You know I like their offense. If the Lakers ever played the Nuggets in the first round,
mm-hmm,
say the 2-7, that would be the 2-7, or say if the Nuggets were to get the 1 seed, which they won't, and the Warriors get the 2, and say the Lakers get the 8 seed, but we'll say 2-7, Nuggets, Lakers. Who are you picking? You got to pick the Lakers. You got to pick the Lakers,
I'm looking at – I probably would with LeBron healthy and with the team constructed the way it is, and especially if they make a deal at the deadline, which is coming up here in about – 2 weeks,
I believe it's February 9th. I believe it's 3 Eastern. February 7th, okay.
If they make a move at the deadline, unless that move is Carmelo Anthony.
Well, then they might be the 10th season.
I agree. But if they make a move, I would have to say it. Look, Jokic is great, obviously. Jamal Murray's having a good season.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not that one, postseason, I can count on you.
No, there's definitely not.
You are knocking it down.
Who's getting the bucket at the end?
More, who's scoring 40 on a night when you need to score 40?
Mm-hmm. The Portland's got that with Lillard, yep, even to, yep, a lesser extent, McCollum.
McCollum,
but, Jokic is great, but, I mean, he actually really is really good. He could give you that.
I think he's
terrific. I mean, I really like him. But I'll tell you, looking at LeBron's entire career, has he ever been so seed dependent?
No.
Like this season can go from a colossal fail to a borderline rousing success based on one seeding.
Yeah, but the only caveat, and it's a small one because it's defeatist, but the only caveat is that if you do end up as the 8 seed,
mm-hmm,
which seems likely. Unless he comes
or the seventh seed. Seven. I mean, they're only a game behind that.
But let's just say he gets it's 8 because, mm-hmm, they're still young.
Okay.
And they play the Warriors, and they get swept.
Okay.
Isn't it kind of a built-in excuse for why they didn't go far? Okay, we hit up against the best team in basketball for the last 3 years.
That gets you anywhere when you've got only 3 years left of LeBron. Mm. I mean, if LeBron's 23 or 24, you could sell that. Hey, it's a building block. Hey, got to learn how to compete. Hey, it's a playoffs, a different monster. LeBron's going to be 35. So even if it's a fair excuse, it
doesn't
you're not
resonate.
Cash that in at the end of the day. I mean, come on. You got to win some rounds here.
You're probably right, but that would be what people would say in L.A. They'd think, oh, okay, it's all right. It wasn't our year. Next year.
I wonder what they would say in L.A. See, the other danger of that is, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, if they don't make the playoffs, which would be an abomination, Or if they do make the 8 seed or the 7 seed and they somehow stumble upon the Warriors and they get swept or lose in 5, I think it does even more damage to their profile, because now I think free agents are saying, it's just not good enough to elevate, even if it's not fair.
Yeah.
I believe that that's a buzz around the Lakers that might dissuade somebody, a superstar who's on the fence, about maybe joining forces with LeBron. Or what this does, everything we just said means nothing because they have Anthony Davis in 2 weeks. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, anything can happen. You never know with the Lakers.
We haven't had any more buzz about AD.
No.
And every time we talk about him, when we have guests on or when we talk about it, it feels like an inevitability. But it just doesn't feel like it's ever going to happen. You know what I mean? You feel the difference, the dichotomy here. It's like, we know it's got to happen.
But it seems far away.
But it seems ridiculously far away, even though it shouldn't be.
Because of the additional money he can make from New Orleans. Exactly. That's a built-in... It's not a built-in life-saving... It's not a life jacket, but it's certainly...
For the Pelicans, you mean.
For the Pelicans. But it's going to keep you out of bumpy waters for one more year. You know, listen, if I'm them, I've been on the record. I've said many times, I got to trade him. Yeah, I mean, and
get
I'm trading him...
Can.
I'm trading him soon.
Get all you can.
The earlier I trade him, you know, think about the value he would have to whether it's the Lakers or Celtics, you know, the 40 more games or 30-ish games the rest of this year plus all the next season.
You're right.
Then free agent. Like, I don't know. I mean, but that's a tough call. That's a tough call. But the Warriors are starting to play well. The West is strange. You know, Oklahoma City's had some weird games this year. Weird games recently. You know, I said they've lost 5 out of 10. They're the 3 seed. You know, and let's at least kick the tires on this out of respect, because it very well might happen. Carmelo to the Lakers once the Bulls get rid of him. I mean, could
I mean, but BT,
but
think about what he becomes in Los Angeles. Because think of how the distribution of minutes is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's skewing more towards these younger guys getting the minutes. Right, we know that the older cats are there still, and they still play. But and Rondo's hurt; he should be back, I think, in a couple days or so. But it's skewing towards the young, Luke Walton wants these young guys to play so that they learn, and they get used to winning. And even if they fail, they learn from the failures. Right, that's what they're going through right now. If Carmelo comes and joins the Lakers, he's definitely not sniffing the starting lineup. And how is he getting minutes? I just don't see it.
Well, without Lonzo, obviously, for up to 6 weeks. I know that Melo's not a point guard, obviously.
No.
But Hart's going to get some big minutes there, and he should anyway because he could shoot, even though he's more of a two.
Yeah.
He's not a pure point.
It's a valuable skill to learn for him.
Yeah, but what it enables them to do is really just hit the trade button and trade Ingram and Lonzo and a first rounder if it's directly for Anthony Davis, or even if it's Butler, which I don't know that would happen.
Mm-mm.
But then at least you have Carmelo as a body, you would think, in theory, capable as a spot-up shooter with LeBron facilitating. You know, maybe he gets his legs under him, maybe he's inspired.
He's not even a good spot-up shooter.
You know where I stand on Melo.
I know.
I don't see
it. That's why it's so confounding. Carmelo's a weird situation, BT, because you want to ignore him, but you can't.
Yeah. He's got a lot of love around the NBA.
That's what I mean.
You know,
the guys love him. Some of his teammates, they love him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we as analysts or whatever from the outside looking in just kind of want to just push him off as insignificant, but you really can't. Because the reality is, he's going to end up on some team, and some teams are going to talk good about him. At least the players on the team are going to say, yeah, he's going to help us. He's going to be good. He's going to do whatever.
Where's his legs going to be?
He hasn't played in a while.
We'll see. We shall see. But he's a Bull now. Mm-hmm. He'll never put on the Bulls uniform, much like he never put on the Hawks uniform. He's going to be up there in the rafters with Dominique and Spud Webb and those guys. Carmelo Anthony night here in Atlanta at Phillips Arena. All right, coming up next, Teak, Bob Nightingale. TikTok, we are getting closer to the revealing of the Hall of Fame. Who's going to get in? Baseball, Mariano, will he be unanimous? Will Mike Mussina squeeze in? Holiday better get in. Edgar, I believe, should as well. We'll talk a little baseball with Bob Nightingale coming up on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way to save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. Hall of Fame Tuesday here on Tiki and Tierney. Who's getting in is number 42, Mariano, going unanimous. A lot of things to unpack here with Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Been around the sport for a long time, and he has piped in. Bob, Tiki and Tierney, how are you today?
Yeah, doing great. How about you guys?
Doing all right. Let me start with this. Like, to me, Bob, the number 75 doesn't really represent, like, greatness, like, eliteness. I'm curious, why, like, the threshold of 75%, do you know anything about the history of why it's 75% and not 80% or 85%? Because to me, I think that could be part of the problem. Can you enlighten us on 75%, why that's the barometer?
You know, I don't know why they came up with that number, but it seems to work. I mean, you go back, a lot of guys, you know, Babe Ruth and weren't even, you know, first ballot guys. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys, you know, weren't even, considered early on. So I still think it's by far the hardest Hall of Fame to get into. So I think if you raise it to, 80 or 85, I think it'd almost be impossible.
What do you know? Like, I keep hearing this, like, Babe Ruth didn't get in early. Like, why not? Like, what were some of the early, obstacles for somebody like Babe Ruth? Yeah. How does that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was having too much fun off the field or what it was. Back in the day, I think everybody, found reasons like, shouldn't be a first-time Hall of Famer. That sort of thing. I mean, this is a lot easier now.
Yeah.
When a guy's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer. And there's guys getting in, now that were, weren't even really considered early on. I mean, yeah. Edgar Martinez should, be a slam dunk today. And he was way down the voting, years ago. Same with Curt Schilling. He won't get in now, but, he'll probably get in a year from now. Larry Walker's making tremendous climb. So I think people are, particularly the sabermetric crowd, is looking at stats differently.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the biggest differentiators is that you can look at advanced statistics. And, Bob, obviously the big question that people will be talking about is Mariano. Should he be 100% unanimous decision? So the first question really is, will he be? And then secondly, these other guys who otherwise would be shoe-ins, these steroid-era guys, when do they eventually, if ever, get in?
Well, I think Mariano's case, I don't think he will be unanimous. I think too many people, hold it against closers.
Yeah.
I mean, even Trevor Hoffman, whose numbers were much different than Mariano, took him four elections to get in. So I think there'd be a few scattered ones out there. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was four votes short. I wouldn't be surprised if Mariano was only like two or three votes short. I think maybe it's going to be unanimous. It could be next year with the, Derek Jeter. I think he's got a real chance to get 100% of the vote.
Yeah.
And on the, steroid guys, there are guys in the Hall of Fame right now who use PEDs.
Yeah.
And these guys, I don't know why we're holding against the two greatest players of the era and two of the greatest players of all time in Bonds and Clemens. So I think they climb over the 60% today. And then they might get in as early as next year. But they got three more years of eligibility. I really believe they get in and should be in.
Yeah. No, Bob, no, it's interesting because when you see the private versus or the public numbers on Bonds and Clemens, it's over the threshold in some cases. But the private ballots are not. What's the difference? Can you explain what the difference is and why some people decide to release their thoughts on this and why others do not?
Yeah, you certainly don't have to, and it just became a thing, recently.
Yeah.
Guys were putting it out there, with the advent of Twitter and all that. nothing to hide. And I think people that don't release it are, they don't want to be publicly humiliated. Say a guy doesn't believe Mariano deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He certainly doesn't want his name out there, and so he wants to live in obscurity. That sort of thing. And I think some people Bonds and Clemens case, you said it's around 70%. It'll drop down probably in the low 60s just because people don't want their names attached. And I think people say, I'll never vote for these guys in. But those same guys are, under tremendous scrutiny saying, wait a minute now, you voted for a guy like Mike Piazza and, Pudge Rodriguez and Jeff Bagwell, all who had, allegations. You know, why not vote for these two guys?
Yeah, but you know what bothers me here? And we're talking to Bob Nightingale, been around the sport forever. And of course, Bob, Hall of Fame writer, USA Today, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. You're right. A lot of people do abstain from putting their votes out there for public, for the court of public opinion to weigh in, because we know the court of public opinion is harsh. But what bothers me is that some people actually do that intentionally to gain a little traction, to get on radio shows, because what's happening now, oh, this guy didn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr. Let's call him up and let's bash him and let's get him on the radio. It's like, it's almost like not a lot of people, but some people have used it as an avenue to get some personal traction.
Yeah, there was a guy, I don't know why he put it out the way he did, but a veteran columnist in Boston, well-respected, he didn't think that Mariano Rivera should be a first-ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Instead of keeping it away from him, he said, I'm not going to vote at all.
Yep.
When he came out and changed his mind and said, okay, I will cast a vote and I will vote for, you know, Mariano. So you had that sort of thing, too, with just a, you know, he had to know it was going to make huge news when he says, he didn't consider Rivera a Hall of Famer. I'm sure his phone lit up.
Yeah, I think it was Billy Ballou, something like that.
Right.
Let me go back to, I think it's going to be fascinating because I'm with you. I've come full circle. I believe Bonds should get in and will get in. Same with Clemens. Sosa, I don't view as favorably for my own personal reasons. Same with Mark McGwire. Mm-hmm. I just think that Clemens and Bonds were more natural, and the other two were a little bit more enhanced via the PEDs. That's just my opinion. I can't really prove that, but if I was voting, I wouldn't vote for them. But I am curious, when Bonds and Clemens eventually get in, Joe Morgan's been very outspoken. What is that stage at Cooperstown going to be like? Because let's face it, now Bob Feller's no longer with us, and he's been an antagonist of Pete Rose forever. A lot of these old-timers, they're not down with the PEDs, understandably. I think it's going to be very divisive. Would half the stage not show up? I mean, it would be pretty interesting. What do you think's going to happen when they do get elected in?
You know, I don't think I think we'd have a few guys not show up. But, you know, yeah, it might be interesting next year. I mean, Derek Jeter fired Andre Dawson, Tony Perez in Miami. Those are the two most popular Hall of Famers there are right now. You know, what's going to be like, you know, will they do that? I'm sure they will, but there's going to be a lot of talk about that.
I
think they will have a handful that won't show up. But, you know, hey, there are guys that were quietly talking about, you know, the Bonds, Bagwell, Pudge as well.
Yeah.
But they showed up.
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily happy about it, but they were there.
Hey, Bob, what do you give us your take on Rory Halladay? Obviously, we know he passed away tragically in that airplane accident over the Gulf. And there's some sentiment here. He's got Hall of Fame numbers. What do you think happens with him in his first year on the ballot?
You know, I think he gets in. I really do. And I think it's going to be easier than I think we all envision. And I think some would be a sympathy vote, you know, the fact that he's not alive, where it may have been more of a test study because of his lack of victories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit like that's what kind of held Curt Schilling back.
Yeah.
This guy's got less wins than Schilling does. So I think he gets in, you know, you talk to among different voters and stuff, you know, people have different feelings about the way he did die. You know, the fact that, you know, some drugs in his body, that sort of thing, you know, who knows what was going on. So in his life at that time, but I think he gets in. I think people, you know, will kind of ignore, you know, how he actually died, you know, doing the airplane stunts and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Bob, who is the player that you've just personally gone back and forth on, And your convictions just vary wildly? Like, you know, I'm never going to vote for him, and then somehow the stats or conversations convince you otherwise, and then you kind of go back to no, and then you go back to yes. Who's the most confounding vote for you over the years?
You know, I've never, until this year, voted for Edgar Martinez. It just bothered me. It was low home run total, ribby total. You know, to me, a DH playing in a great hitter's ballpark and with great teams, you know, the fact he's got like 180 home runs less than Fred McGriff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about 200 ribbies less.
Yeah, but Freddie never hit 330. You know that. Freddie never hit 330.
No, right. But he was a DH. I mean,
yeah.
The one thing about, yeah, he hit 330 and until, you know, going off on the on-base percentage. But you can argue that Edgar Martinez is clogging the base pass, too. Just go in and
run.
Hit the ball. You know, a little bit like a Joey Votto and Cincy. So, but I did vote just because for this year, too many guys I respect and guys in the Hall of Fame, since he was among those feared hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah, but hold, let me stop you, Bob. Bob, let me respectfully, may I stop you for a moment? I love that you incorporate others' views. I think that's part and anything. I think that's important in life, not just for voting on a Hall of Fame. But Bob Nightingale doesn't need somebody to tell him what he's watched. You've been around the game forever. If you don't think Edgar Martinez is a Hall of Famer for 9 years, this is one of the, with all due respect, one of the fundamental issues I have with voters. You've come around on the 10th year, his final year on the ballot. It just seems very inconsistent.
Well, I mean, that part is. I mean, it'd be more inconsistent, obviously, if I'm going back and forth every other year type thing. But you're right. But just having people so outspoken about his career.
Yeah.
And the one thing, too, you know, to be honest, is the fact that it's his last year on the ballot. If he missed by one vote, I don't want to be the guy that's going to cause him.
Okay, I can respect the honesty there. Okay, that's what I was getting after. Because that's my one concern. And by no means, listen, we've had you on the show a million times. I've had you on my show, other stations. I've followed you forever. And I don't want you to take this personally at all. But I feel like you're not alone in that thought process. Like last year, other people kind of convinced me. And if those conversations happen enough, it really does ultimately skew the way the Hall of Fame actually looks over time, negatively.
Yeah, well, I think, too, just people kind of, you know, collapse under pressure or change their mind, let the sabermetric crowd change their mind for them. You know, I'm looking at, you know, a guy like Larry Walker. I have not voted for Walker and did not do it this year. This guy was down to about 12% 4 years ago, and all of a sudden, you watch, he's going to be over 60, 65%, and people going crazy for Larry Walker. It's like, why are people's minds changed in 5 years?
Yeah.
It's almost like they feel pressure to do so.
All right. So, listen, I got Mariano today. I'm going to give him 100%. We'll see. I have Roy Halladay today. I've got Edgar today. I've got three, and I've got Mike Mussina missing out by about 1 or 2 percentage points. That sound about right?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue. I'm with you. I think Mussina will be very, very close. Okay. I could see him just missing. Tough to see four guys get in like that. Mm-hmm. So I got a feeling you're right.
Bob, listen, we'll find out pretty soon who's right, who's not. Good stuff. Appreciate the honesty. Thank you, Bob.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
There you go. Now, listen, he was honest. He's like, hey, guys, you know, I don't want to be the one guy holding them out.
But they're human. You know,
and I can respect the honesty, at least it's transparency
it's
there.
It's interesting, though, because I see a parallel with what happens in the National Football League mm-hmm. in their voting process. It's all about being lobbied into voting for a guy. Right, it's different in the NFL because it's all lobbying, right?
Yes.
I have to convince you,
100%,
as well as everybody else in this secret room, mm-hmm. that my guy, whoever I'm advocating for, belongs in the Hall of Fame at the expense of your guy because there's mm-hmm. only five that they mm-hmm. let in. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Major League Baseball, it's like, okay, yeah, I don't really think he's in, but if you can convince me, then maybe I'll change my mind. Right?
It's amazing.
It is amazing, but that's just how it works.
And it's so public, so there is a different type of pressure that the football voters in the room don't feel because
don't
it's
feel
not
it
out there for the court of public opinion to dissect.
You're right.
All right. Good stuff. We'll find out a little bit who's in. Axe Update is right now. Here's Rich Ackerman. All right, time for the Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Take a look at somebody who got it done this week. It's Klay Thompson. Klay went full Klay mode last night. He shot 10 of 11 from three, including an NBA tying 10 straight triples. Finished with 44 as the Warriors blow out the Lakers at Staples Center. Klay's shooting 51% from downtown since the new year. No coincidence, Warriors rolling. They've won 8 of 9 during the span. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Grainger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies to keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it. Go to Grainger.com. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206. Let's check our poll question here before we get to the blast. This was about possibly elevating the percentage benchmark for Hall of Fame enshrinement here. I posed that out there. All right, so the Hall of Fame is going to be announced today. As we know, some believe it's become a bit watered down with the inclusions of players like Harold Baines and Trevor Hoffman. Should the Hall increase the minimum votes needed from 75%? If so, to what? Let's see. Well, 63% of you say no, keep it as is. Mm-hmm. 75%, so I guess you're cool with it. 17% say yep, raise it to 80. 20% say yes, raise it to 85. So 37% say raise it.
I think the those that want to keep it or look at the fact that only 1.2% of MLB players are in. I mean, that's a very small percentage.
It is.
When you think about it. I think a lot of it is you're rewarded for longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Like Edgar Martinez, he played till he was, what, 40?
Just about.
Right? He didn't really start being a banger until he was
28-ish.
30-ish.
28, 29. Yeah, Jay exactly. Buhner, those teams.
Yep.
Griffey, so, of course. Cora, Randy Johnson.
And so because of the length of the careers, right, there's not a ton of guys that, over the course of, like, 50 years that have been really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Let me see. That is a small percentage, boy. When you boil it down to that, it's kind of hard to
I know, right?
To really complain about the whole process here. But that, I mean, it seems a little watered down. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because
I'm
I
sorry.
Think it's only because of some of the names that have gotten in recently that just don't feel. I mean, Chipper Jones, he's Hall of Famer, right?
And oh,
like,
absolutely.
Like Mariano, he's easy Hall of Famer. But there's others that have felt on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then, on the edge guys kind of got to get in, right?
Yeah, I guess to keep it fair. I mean, last year you had Vlad get in. Vlad's
that's a
no-brainer. Beast. No-brainer.
Exactly.
You know, Trevor Hoffman.
Just hope his son. Is his son going to follow up in like 20 years?
His son's going to play in the bigs this year for sure. He's an absolute beast. Trevor Hoffman, I get it. If I want to be a real nerd, I could point out that I'd never viewed him as a Hall of Famer, but the stats bear it out. All right, Chipper Jones, stud. Jack Morris got in, obviously, but I always thought that he was unfairly treated. Alan Trammell, his teammate from those 80s Tigers, he got in as well. I didn't think that Trammell deserved it as much as Jack Morris. That's just me. And a guy like Jim Thome. See, a guy like Jim Thome is really, and this speaks to your point about longevity, right?
Yep.
Over 600 home runs. He's sixth or seventh in walks. He walked almost 2,000 times. But, Mike, can you pull up Jim Thome stats real quick? I don't have them in front of me. Maybe seventh or eighth in walks, whatever it was. But he played on so many different teams. And
it's
maybe,
almost like he lacked an identity.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. Because you can't picture him. You're like, who is he?
Jim Thome as an Indian. I think of Jim Thome as an Indian. I think of him as Manny Ramirez and Alomar and Sandy. I just think of the team that beat Mariano and the Yankees in 97 when Sandy Alomar hit the home run to right field. I think of Jim Thome. I see him in a blue Indians jersey. That's what I see him in.
Because I don't see him like Baltimore, no. Philly, no.
No. Philly more. Where else did he play? I played White Sox for sure. White Sox, Dodgers, Twins. Say this. Is this on air? Say all these teams on air. Go ahead.
I mean, in his last two years.
That's exactly your point.
In his last 2 years, he was in four places. He started 2011 in Minnesota, then went to Cleveland in 2011. 2012, he was in Philly, and then Baltimore.
Yeah.
So four teams in 2 years.
Yeah,
he played for the White Sox, Minnesota, the Dodgers for a year.
Give me from the start, Mike.
Indians from 91 through 02.
Yeah, that's
why,
chunk
that's
right there.
Why.
Phillies from 03 to 05. White Sox 06 to 08.
Yeah.
Dodgers for 09. I got traded midseason.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2010 Minnesota, then Cleveland, Philly, Baltimore.
Yeah, I think Philly is the one that sticks with me because I was here.
Yeah,
in New York.
Yeah, yeah,
I was,
yeah.
You know, a football player.
Yeah.
You're ingrained in the... like the Philly New York rivalry a little bit.
I get it. I also think that he is, I don't want to say unfairly thrust into Hall of Fame status because 600 plus home runs, you're a Hall of Famer. Yeah, I get it. But he's viewed as corn fed, no steroids, clean. All right, let's reward him a little bit here. But
he almost got 90% too, to your point.
That's crazy.
I mean, so he's in by your new metric or not.
He's still in.
Yeah.
I know.
And BT, you always talk about, you know, leading the league in certain statistics.
Yeah.
Now, he led the league in strikeouts three times.
So did Reggie, so that doesn't matter.
Not a big deal.
Yeah, so did Mickey Mantle.
Walks three times, nice category. But
I think he's seventh all-time in walks. I believe I know he's top 10.
But again,
almost
22 2000. Seasons. Outside of those walks and strikeouts, he led the league in home runs once, which is a big deal.
That's once.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Never in RBI, never in runs, never in hits, never in doubles. He did lead once in slugging and OPS.
No, that's a great stat.
Yeah, so that's nice.
Yeah,
right? Once in home runs, once in slugging, once in OPS. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, same thing with Biggio. Really, really good players who compiled incredible stats over a long, extended career.
I know where you're going.
So I'm looking at this, the sample gave us at the beginning of the show. I'm just getting to it now.
Mm-hmm.
All of the percentages over the last, this goes back to 1999.
Okay.
So in 20 years, basically.
Okay.
There's a couple that don't hit BT's new threshold.
Okay.
Trevor Hoffman.
It was 79 change,
but
right?
Just barely.
Yeah. I mean, and they don't round up, by the way.
I know.
Just so people know that. If you get 79.9, they do not round
that's
up.
That's what he has, 79.9.
Yeah, they don't round
Trevor
up.
Trevor Hoffman.
Sorry, he's not in.
No, he's not in. Hey. Pudge.
It's a tough Hall of Fame.
Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah, Pudge was a Hall of Famer.
But he was 76.
But that doesn't mean that it's right.
But he, yeah, agreed. But it's also the PED bias.
Uh-huh.
So yep. Some of these guys, there's a little bit of a
pullback.
A pullback
no
because
doubt about
of the
it.
PED bias.
Yep.
So Biggio was 82.7.
And it took Biggio a while.
Yep. It took him a long while. 13, there was nobody. Remember uh-huh. that year?
Yep.
You have to go all the way back now to 2011 with Blylevin.
79% as well.
79% right
on
the edge.
He had a lot of strikeouts. He was on that. He had about 272 wins, I think,
yep.
And well over 3,000. Sick curveball.
Dawson.
Andre Dawson won an
Dawson
MVP.
In 2010, he was 77.
Okay. He was really good for those Expos teams, too.
Yeah.
Not just the Cubs.
Who else
Expos.
Is on this list?
Tim Raines got in. Took Tim Raines a long time.
Suter. Bob Suter.
Bruce Suter.
All right, Bruce Suter is 76.9. Ryan Sandberg was 76.
See, I thought Ryan Sandberg to me is a great illustration of the fundamental problem I have with this. Ryan Sandberg, if you watched baseball in the 80s, Ryan Sandberg was undeniably one of the best players in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
He could run.
Yeah.
I don't have a stolen, but I know he'd steal, 18, 22, 20. He'd steal, he'd definitely steal. He had pop for a second baseman. Before second baseman really had pop.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Gritch had a little pop in the late 70s and early 80s, but he was kind of, next. Tommy Herr had a lot of RBIs in the mid-80s, but not home runs.
Sam just told me, 10 straight All-Stars and an MVP.
Oh, Ryan Sandberg was, that 85 Cubs team I thought was going to win the World
who's
Series,
he,
too.
Who's it? Who was the last second baseman to win MVP? Was it him?
The last second baseman? No, it's got to be Altuve.
Oh yeah, forget
it's got to be. It's got to be Altuve.
Yeah, you're right.
Before
you're
that,
right.
yeah.
You're
before
right.
that, I don't know. You hit me with a lot of numbers now, but I like it. It's all
Jeff
good.
Kent, I'm just trying to test your baseball knowledge.
Jeff Kent, Jeff Kent to me. I mentioned Jeff before. I believe that Jeff, he's got the MVP.
Oh,
but
Dustin Pedroia. Of course, how did I forget Dustin Pedroia?
I forgot about Pedroia. He really hasn't been the same since either. He's really been banged up.
You're right.
But a guy like Sandberg, again, in the 80s, one of the best players in the 80s. Didn't necessarily have the longevity.
Mm-hmm.
He's a no doubt about it. What was his percentage there?
76.
I mean, that's a joke. That's not commensurate with what he actually did during his prime.
Yeah.
Brian Sandberg was great.
Yeah.
He was great.
Yeah, you're right. And then.
I mean, he was like Ripken. It was Sandberg, Ripken. I mean, those are the names.
Fisk, Carlton Fisk. Was under 80.
He played forever. Red Sox and White Sox. I'm okay with
Robert
him.
Robert Yount was 77.
Yep. Shortstop in center field.
Yeah. So, but most of them, interestingly.
But the funny thing is, as much as I wanted to jack it up to 80%, I would give a little commissioner's exemption. I would say Robin Yount, I do believe he should have more than 80%.
Sandberg as well.
Ryan Sandberg as well. Carlton Fisk, Pudge Fisk, I didn't see him really with the Red Sox. I was a little bit too young. I know what he did.
Yeah, but he's just
I remember him more as a
he's
White 79, Sox.
79 and 6, so 79.6.
Yeah, and we don't round up. Hey, can't get him, Pudge. Nah, he was a gamer. Great moment in the 75 World Series.
3 years. I asked Sam how long it took Ryan Sandberg to get in. 3 years.
It's 3 years too long.
But here's the crazy thing. His first year was 49%, second year 61%, then 76. And I think he's a Hall of Famer, but 51% of people didn't think he was a Hall of Famer in 2003.
But 51% on your first ballot is strong.
Well, no, 49% on your first ballot.
Incredibly strong.
Sure, but like it just feels.
I'm telling you.
Listen, he's a Hall of Famer, but it just feels like it's such a flawed system.
It is.
If he's 76% in 2005, what's changed from 2003? 49%, he's in.
Is if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer.
Well, yeah, if you're a Hall of Famer, you should be. 49%, that's crazy.
Why do you got to earn it?
There's never going to be a right answer to this. It's always going to be a little confusing, a little frustrating. But the bottom line is once they get in.
It's a local bias, too. So locally.
Local writers, you mean.
Writers,
sure.
So they'll vote for their guys.
Oh,
and so they can only vote for 10.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
And they held it against, I keep bringing up Jim Rice, but they held it up. They really held it against Jim Rice. He had a dour personality.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, there's been some that have been very gregarious that have benefited from a positive personality. So we'll find out a little bit. But those are my guys. Mariano, I've got Roy Halladay, I've got Edgar. I'm going to go with three. I'm going to say Moose just misses. Teek, have a great night, buddy.
Thank you, brother.
And Carson Wentz, you want to keep debating that?
No, I got to run up and do a show.
See you guys tomorrow. Peace. Got to go.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.